time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Anna, good morning.
Morning, Bob.
This first story, I remember this story about the gorilla. I can't believe it was 1996.
1996, Bob, this week. A lot of listeners will remember this moment if you're around then. The Chicago area was captivated by a three-year-old boy and the mother gorilla who likely saved his life. Binti Jua, an eight-year-old gorilla at the Brookfield Zoo, did what no one thought she was going to do. No one thought what would happen when this toddler just fell into the gorilla enclosure. He was with his mom and somehow got away from her at the zoo and climbed over the planters, made his way over the railing, and plunged like almost 30 feet into the gorilla enclosure. And everyone was horrified. It was this beautiful summer day, and everybody was watching thinking, what is going to happen? This kid is injured. He looked badly hurt. And the female gorilla just walked over and scooped him up in her arms, kind of cradled him, it seemed like, was really gentle, and just kind of brought him over to the zookeeper door and said, you know, here you go. Let's help this boy, it seemed like. I mean, I don't know what you read into the mind of that gorilla, but it certainly seemed as if things could have gone really bad if that poor child had just remained in that enclosure. And so that's what happened. We pulled a clip from the WGN TV News, the coverage that night, August 19th, 1996.
If you look close, you can see her wrapping her strong arm around his waist and gingerly carrying him. She takes him to a door where she hands him over to rescuers. The three-year-old had to climb over a barrier, railing, and planter like this one to get to a point where he fell. He apparently wandered away from his mother. Zoo officials say this hasn't happened in the 14 years since the exhibit opened. There were six other gorillas in the exhibit when the boy fell. The animals are far from tame, unpredictable, and at times violent by nature. The toddler is lucky it was Binti Jua rushing to his aid. She picked him up only seconds after falling.
She was not showing any aggressive behavior towards the little boy. It's a very dangerous situation. You do not want to be in their territory.
And you can still see the gorilla today, right?
It's amazing, remarkable. She's still around, 36 years old, Bob. She was eight at the time, and she's still at the Brookfield Zoo.
Fantastic animal story. Love it. Let's talk about an iconic commercial now.
Be Like Mike. Who doesn't know this commercial, this totally iconic commercial, Bob? Be Like Mike, starring Michael Jordan, created and shot in Chicago by Chicago ad execs, starring Michael Jordan. It hit the airwaves right after the Gatorade execs announced their big sponsorship deal with Michael Jordan. They had taken him away from Coke and when his deal with them expired, and here they were announcing a new long-term partnership. Quaker had just bought Gatorade at the time, Bob, and they were interested in this relatively new thing where you hire an athlete to front your product, and you know, it was really seemed to be doing well with marketing. Before that, Quaker and Gatorade had only used Yvonne Lendl and Jennifer Capriati overseas, so this was a big departure and a huge win for the company, obviously. Be Like Mike was the ad that featured local kids playing basketball with Michael Jordan. It was shot at basketball courts all across the Chicago area. They went to Lincoln Park, Cabrini Green, shot some at North Avenue Beach as well. And we pulled a little clip just to remember that iconic song.
Debuted in August of 1991, and yep. They're still benefiting from that campaign, aren't they?
Get that one out of your head today, Bob. See if that works. Yeah, to $500 million within a couple years, Gatorade sales shot up from $83 million to $500 million just in a couple years. So it all worked for them. The Jordan effect.
Yeah, I'll say. Ribfest, you know, you forget that this all started with Mike Royko, didn't it?
Mike Royko, legendary newspaper man, columnist. pianist who started it all back 1982 this week, Bob. Incredibly well-attended rib-making, rib-tasting food fest. Roy Cohn once boasted in a column that, you know, I've got the best rib sauce, my family, you know, blah, 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 and I've got the best one. To prove it, I'm going to hold this rib fest thing. You know, he had done some backyard barbecues and everyone's, oh, you got the best rib sauce, Roy Cohn. But now he said, no, I'm going to prove it. 400 competitors showed up in Grand Park in 1982 to face off, and Roy Cohn's sauce didn't even make the cut, Bob. Not in the blind taste test. Didn't make it. Interesting, though, what did make it, Robinson's Ribs won that very first year, and you think about it, that launched a restaurant, a barbecue sauce brand. A couple years later, Sweet Baby Ray's won. That's a brand that's like one of the most, it's still one of the top-selling barbecue sauces in the world to this day. We pulled a news report from one of those early rib fests for you, Bob, here, reminding us all what a spectacle it was.
Smoke filling the sky, and not from burning leaves, but from hundreds of barbecue kettles, on which were spread in great disarray thousands of pork ribs. And somewhere in the smoke, Mike Royko, columnist and rib cook extraordinaire, who gets what out of all this?
I get burnt. I get burnt often. And mainly I get to see a lot of nice people.
His own secret rib sauce will forever remain a secret.
You shouldn't even ask about secret ingredients. I mean, it's not, it's poor form.
They never marketed or bottled his sauce, did
they? No, never saw that one. You know, Dick has got his own brands and stuff, but not Royko. Yeah. I don't know. Didn't work out.
A lot of other folks have benefited, though, by the Rib Fest.
Yeah, you think even a first, second, or third place prize in that competition, Bob, would be like marketing gold. It was such a, you know, cool thing.
Ah, I love that song. I love Buddy Guy.
Buddy Guy, Bob. Who doesn't love Buddy Guy? So sad news to hear that he's going to hang up the touring, you know, thing. He's just not going to be touring anymore. And next month is when he's going to call it quits, he says. One of the greatest blues artists of all time, one of the greatest guitar players of all time, Rolling Stone put Buddy Guy at number 23 on their top 100 list. But the touring hat, he's hanging up for good. He's 88 years young. Think about that. And it's interesting to think because he says that even up till 2 years ago, he was averaging 130 shows a year. He's 86. So I don't know. We don't want Buddy Guy to go away, but you understand why he might not want to tour so much anymore. He's still going to perform at Buddy Guy's Legends and Blues Fest. Maybe he'll show up for that. I don't know. But it's interesting because you think about what he's achieved. 8 Grammys, so many blues awards, too many to count. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But of all of his honors, he says that he's received over 70 plus years performing. This week in 2012, Bob, marks the award he said was probably the most treasured moment of his life, personally. August 15th, 2012, Buddy Guy was awarded the National Medal of Arts by President Barack Obama, who, it is the highest honor given to artists in the U.S. government. He hung that medal around his neck, and it was just so emotional. We pulled some of the audio from that moment.
Growing up as the son of a sharecropper in Louisiana, Buddy Guy made his first guitar out of wires from a window screen. That worked until his parents started wondering how all the mosquitoes were getting in. But Buddy was hooked, and a few years later, he bought a one-way ticket to Chicago to find his heroes, Muddy Waters and Howling Wolf. And pretty soon, he was broke, hungry, and ready to head home. And then one night, outside a blues club, a man pulled up and handed Buddy a salami sandwich and said, "I'm Mud, and you ain't going nowhere." And that was the start of something special. Of course, success hasn't changed the humble country boy who used to milk cows on a farm outside of Baton Rouge. Buddy tells a story about his son Greg wanting to learn to play the guitar like Prince. Buddy told him he'd better learn some Jimi Hendrix first. And it was only after watching a TV special on Hendrix that Greg found out Jimi had borrowed some licks from his dad. So Greg said, "I didn't know you could play like that." And Buddy said, "You never asked."
What a Chicago treasure Buddy Guy is.
Such a treasure. You'll still see him at Buddy Guy's Legends. He said he'll sit in his stool and he'll occasionally play when he wants to, but he's going to play when he wants to. He did say his goal, though, in his final years here is to keep the blues alive for the next generation. He said he made that promise to Muddy Waters when he died.
Yeah, I've been with him many times, seen him perform many times. You know what his secret is? He's the only musician I know of who who actually goes to bed early and gets up early. He still
How does he do that?
I don't know. let's talk about a very famous painting that you can still see here in Chicago.
I just saw it at the Art Institute the other day. The American Gothic. This week, it was put on display at the Art Institute in 1930. It's been there ever since. That is the painting is of the farmer sternly facing forward, holding a pitchfork, standing next to a younger woman who many assume to be his wife, Bob, but a lot of people call it the farmer and his wife, but it's actually intended to be his daughter. And the two people featured in the painting were based on models who posed for the artist, Grant Wood. The farmer was a friend, and the daughter was actually the artist's sister who sat for that painting. Interesting backstory, Grant Wood entered an Art Institute competition in 1930. He took third place. The Art Institute purchased that painting, and then they put it on display a short while later. It is one of the most famous and most parodied paintings of all time. I've seen Barbie and Ken in that picture. I've seen, the Flintstones. There's all kinds of things. I think it's been on The Simpsons. But it was intended to reflect the theme of Midwestern agricultural life, life on the farm, and it has become just a symbol of Americana. Go check it out.
Yeah,
it
went on display this week in 1930, and I bet there are many, many people who don't realize they can see it, that it's here.
When you walk around the Art Institute, you're like, wait a minute, the Van Gogh self-portrait is here, you just go, the water lilies is here. I mean, what? You just forget. Yeah. It's all there.
The
go
tourists
see it.
Know. Go people from out of town
They'll tell
know.
You.
And finally, we have candy history here in Chicago. We have a lot of candy
we
history here.
We have so much of this, and I just love all of it. Brock's Candies, did you ever like the butterscotch discs?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah. I remember my dad used to come home with a big bag of them, because that was the thing. Brock sold them wholesale to the public, and that's kind of how they made their name for themselves. But summer of 1910, they first debuted the butterscotch discs, and it just really took off, like so many of the candies that Emil Brock started in his candy company on the Chicago's north side. Originally made caramels, Bob, but that was 1904. Then he bought a kettle, transitioned into hard candies, and still did caramels, but his business really expanded because he designed this whole thing where you did wholesale to the public and you could buy it in bulk at great prices. So he undercut the fancy downtown candy makers, and he was making just lots of great candies. So do you remember the Brock's Pick-a-Mix? You could go into the grocery store and you'd scoop up whatever you wanted. That was kind of built upon that whole idea that we sell wholesale to the public. You get to pick what you want. But the butterscotch discs remained one of the most popular candies for generations. Sadly, they stopped making them under the Brock's name, Bob. I guess you can still get something like this, but it's not made. They've been bought and sold so many times, and those just aren't available under the Brock's name. Still can get the peppermints, I think, but a lot of the others.
It's the story of all the great candy companies around here.
Totally. Yeah,
and Mars just sold that beautiful building in Oak Park.
Yeah, I saw that. It's just, changing times, I suppose.
All right, I need some of those butterscotch candies. Thank
wouldn't
you.
Wouldn't this be nice?